So just a note then, Tony, obviously you didn't grow up in Birmingham, you grew up in Tamworth, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Good style, yeah, notes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't say class me as a Brummie. I'm not offending any Brummies.
No. Ironically, most Brummies are going out to live in Tamworth now, aren't they?
Yeah, obviously they are. Then they know their stuff. No, I grew up in Tamworth, yes. Proud to say I'm a Tammy. As like you said, there's a lot of Birmingham people in town, which is, I ain't got a problem with that.
So as a local lad from Tamworth then, blues to start off with, or?
Blues fan, always been a blues fan. Yeah. I was a bit of a closet Tottenham fan as a kid growing up, just because of Pat Jennings.
Okay.
Any time Tottenham came to the Midlands, my dad would take me to watch Pat Jennings, really, and try and get a ticket behind one goal, you know, see him at least for 45 minutes close up. So I was a closet then, and then my sort of desire and support in Birmingham City really grew more intently because of Steve Fox, an ex-player, you know, who's no longer with us, God rest his soul. His house, his mum and dad's house, backed onto my mum and dad's house, and in between us was actual football pitch. And because he was a few years older than me, I really followed his path, same junior team, same school deemed, and then eventually it led me to the Blues. So I used to stand on the cop watching Steve Fox play for the Blues and thinking to myself, I'd love to be Steve Fox. So I became a Blues fan, really, I would say mainly because of Steve Fox. Obviously, I followed him before that, but I never went as regular until Foxy got into the Blues team and we started going down, and all my mates are Blues fans, and we started farming the Blues on a regular basis.
Take us through kind of how it happened then, Scotty.
So I was at Villa being from Tamworth and Bodymore East, just round the corner. We're just over the road from here, isn't it? I got spotted by one of their scouts. I was asked to go down for a trial. Went down for a trial for Villa. Ended up being in the same youth team as people like Brendan Ormsby, Colin Gibson, Gary Williams, Gary Shaw. Played a couple of times. Played with Gary Shaw. Ivor Linton. I'm trying to think of the ones that went on there's some big names for you then. I had a bit of a dust up in the digs with one of the players ended up punching him. You don't know this story. You've not read my book then, have you?
Oh, no, I'm going to read it.
So I was putting digs in Sutton Coldfield. Jim Paul and his wife, he was the ex-kit man. They ran the digs. And I think it was about six or seven of us in there at the time. And we had a lad in there. Shall I name him? I don't want to make him famous, to be honest. We had a lad in there. Let's just say he was Scottish. And he went back to Scotland without having a real career in England. They used to call me Talk a Lot because I never used to speak to him. And he said to me one day, he went, Talk a Lot. He said, there's a phone call for you on the communal phone. So I went out, come back, and my pork chop had gone off my plate. We'd been training all day, I was starving. So I said, oh, all right, he's put it back, who's had it? Oh, Talk a Lot this and Talk that. It's the same guy, mouthy.
What position did he play?
Midfield, left footed. That's all I'm telling you.
Yeah,
don't want to make him famous. So it's in my book. So I should tell you really, but I'm not going to. I'm going to get you to get my book. So I says, oh, you call me Talk a Lot. I said, you do the talking for everybody, don't you? I went, I said, call me Pork Chop. I bore out. I just levelled him. Walked out, went upstairs, packed my gear, went on the corner, two peas there and in the phone box there. Ring my dad, come and pick me up. Why, what's happened? I'll tell you when you get in the cab. Got the biggest bollocking off my dad, throwing my career away, this, that, the other. So I started playing local football. Played for Milo Rovers in Tamworth. We had a really good team, good young team. Won quite a lot in the Midlands.
Billy's dad, father.
No, that was, they were. I played with him at Kingsbury United with the fathers.
Okay.
John, Steve, Tim. It was Billy's dad, was John, was he?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Anyway. And then I signed for Marlott Rovers. And the manager there knew Jim Smith. He said, we've got a good young goalkeeper here. He said, you might be interested in having a look at him. I went down for a week's trial, played in a trial game at Northampton. I won 2-0, thought I'd done okay. And then they signed me for a month to have a longer stay. Then they signed me for the rest of the season. Then I got full season, full year's contract. And then I got released. I got released without playing in the first team or anything. I was devastated. All I could think about is how am I going to tell my mum and dad when I get back home? This, that, and the other. My dreams ended, this, that, and the other. I even started thinking about the non-league teams of who I could play for, this, that, and the other.
What age was it about?
I was 18 then. So it was like a quick year. I was 17 when I signed. And then, so I missed the apprentice stage, but I mucked in and did the jobs with them anyway. And then I got released. And then I was cleaning my dad's car. I got a phone call. I think they were trying to bring in another young goalkeeper, and it didn't work out. I don't know this as fact, because they said, look, we're going on a youth tour to Germany. Would you like to come? You know, try and surpass your disappointment of being released and all this. I wanted to say, basically, thanks, but no thanks.
I was going
to
say,
you know, but I hadn't been abroad. I hadn't been on a plane. And that was my only motivation at that time was, I'll go abroad.
Might as well get a holiday out of it.
Yeah, I might as well, you know, sample and get an experience. And that's how I thought of it. And my dad tried to put a more positive spin on it and say, well, somebody in Germany might want you. You know, I never ever thought about playing abroad. I don't think they'd bring hardly any players going abroad. So I thought, right, I'll go. Yeah. And the lad at Birmingham, who was in with Diggs in Sheldon, with Terry Goode, he was been released as well. So anyway, we go, we win the tournament. Mark Dennis was playing. Mark Dennis was in the team. Pat Vandenauer was in the team. And that was it, really. That there's a couple of one appearances, or maybe two appearances. They've had Paul Ivey, Trevor Dark, Tony Inchy. I think they all made one appearance for Blues first team at some stage. Anyway, we end up winning the tournament. I get goalkeeper of the tournament, and Terry gets top goal scorer. So we come back. Again, I'm cleaning my dad's car. It was ironic that both times, you know, I'm cleaning my dad's car. Phone went. We think we've made a mistake. We want off you another year. Year goes by. Jim gets the sack. Ron Saunders comes in. He gives me a new lease of life. Believes in me. This, that, and the other. But I'd made my debut under Jim. You know what I mean? But I played 8 games that season after my debut.
Is that accurate as well? Your first appearance? You stopped a penalty.
I've got a number plate. My daughter's bought me a number plate, and it's got TC 54 pen on it, which is obviously for my first touch on my debut, saving a penalty after 54 seconds without, you know, so.
That's a great thing.
Yeah.
What was that?
And that, you know, because you know what, to this day, I can't believe it, that even my close family, yeah, we had this over Christmas, even my close family thought I'd come on as a sub. And I actually started the game.
When you first lived, was it 54 minute?
54 seconds.
Oh, 54 seconds.
Yeah,
I've got that for the pendant.
It was the 27th of December, and we'd had a bit of this, and it was quite the pitch was a little bit slippy in areas, this and the other. The ball come in, zipped up, and Joe Gallagher handballed it, and he gave a penalty straight away. So I hadn't even touched the ball. The you take things out of. You know, I tell stories about, oh, you debut that penalty save, this, that, and the other. And I take things out. I don't think about that. Yeah, it's an honour. I'm in the Guinness Book of Records. You know what I mean? And it's an honour. But the things that are, it's stupid things that you remember. I went for a pre-match meal with the first team that day. I'd never had a fillet steak in my life. We couldn't afford fillet steak where I was from. My dad was a lorry driver, and we couldn't afford stuff. And I had a fillet steak, and I'm thinking, I mean, they don't have them now. Because I remember, it was sat there, it's 9 minutes. Sat there for 9 minutes, and I was that nervous. I was thinking, it's going to come back up. But I'd had a fillet steak, you know. And the other, you know, the other memory I've got of it is actually how small the pitch looked with crowd in. Because I'd only played on it in the reserves and the youth team when there was no crowd. So it looked a lot bigger.
Yeah.
But then when there's crowd in, it looks so much smaller. It's just the perception I got. And I remember coming off, we won the game. We won the game 3-2. Frank Williamson scored a fantastic winner. So he'd earned me my first win bonus, which was like, how many? Well, I was on 45 quid a week. 45 quid a week, and win bonus 250 quid.
Wow.
So months, you know, that time. So and my wages did get better, by the way, but I just remember that bonus, like when I got my pay slip. Fuck, hell, 250 quid win bonus. So I came in the players lounge when, you know, my brother-in-law has passed away now, and my dad were at the game, and couldn't wait to get over to me, this, that, and the other. I went, Dad, you went, oh no, brilliant, why not? I've had a fillet steak. And that's all I kept saying, I've had a fillet steak. And that's all you know, stupid things.
What end
does that?
What end do you say the pedal here?
Railway end.
Railway.
Yeah.
Fine.
Low to me, right. It's just stupid, you know what I mean? All I kept going on about was this bloody fillet steak. So great start to my career. And then Jeff Wheelers was back in the team. And then Jim gave me another 7 games towards the end of the season. We were safe mid-table.
Because Wheelers keep good.
Jeff Wheelers.
He did it as well, wasn't
he? Yeah.
I suppose it's difficult for keepers, though, isn't it, to get into a team unless there's a spike of injuries or suspensions or whatever. So it's getting your chances, isn't it?
I think it's harder now because they carry more. You know, you have a squad of goalkeepers now.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Training on a first team level. Whereas at that time, there was Jeff, not, and Neil Freeman was still there. Me. And I think David Coles was the youth keeper who went on to have a career, and then he's a great goalkeeping coach. I'm still in touch with him now. I think that was it throughout the club. Normally that meant he's just with the first team group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it's harder now. And that's in my role as a coach. And even now scouting, advising our goalkeeping coaches is clear pathways and development programs for our goalkeepers, because they all can't play. So we have to get to a certain level so we can get them out on loan and get them experiences. And that's what we're doing now. So I think it was probably a little bit easier in my day, I've got to be honest. Yeah.
So what's the difference when Ron came in? When did you feel like I belong in the team? I'm the first.
Yeah, so Ron was brilliant at. So Jim Blythe, we'd bought in Jim Blythe. He called me in I remember it's clear as anything. He called me and he said, look, I think you're a good prospect. He said, but I'm going to bring you in, we need an experienced one. And he brought Jim Blythe in. Jim was great, this, that and the other, helpful. But Jim, Ron's training was completely different to Jim's. It was so simple. I never had a goalkeeping coach, but we used to do shooting and finishing. And then he had a coach called Keith Leonard, who's ex-Villa centre forward. He used to stay out with me in the youth team, coach, firing balls at me at different. So it was like goalkeeping coaching without being.
Yeah,
assistant. Yeah.
No, the technical aspect.
The technical aspect. It was just firing balls at me, which was good. I really liked it. So that was at the end of training every day. I worked with those two. And then in training, one just made you feel confident. He made everybody feel really confident. And people say to me, oh, I didn't get on with Ron or this, that, or that. He's Mick Marmite.
Yeah.
I loved him. And I think you always do when somebody believes in you. And then Jim got suspended. I went in the team and stayed in the team. And
took a chance.
And I just took a chance, yeah. And I'd probably say the season before I left was one of the most confident times of my career. Because I knew the manager really believed in me, and it was just, and I'm playing for Birmingham City. I was so proud because I followed them, you know, in the honour of playing for them. And I remember playing at St Andrews and playing really well and thinking, I wonder how many of my schoolmates are in there. So I'd do the things that you think about, you know what I mean? And I'd go back to Tamworth at the night. I mean, I was at the funeral yesterday and we went for a drink after. And I bumped into three lads that I grew up with. They're all blue noses. You know what I mean? They're all, you've got to come on me. I had seen them for donkey's years. You've got to come on me 60th. You've got to come on there. You've got to come on. You know, and this, that, and the other. And he was like, it was good to see him. Oh, I remember when we travelled to Oldham away and this, that, and the other. And, you know, so it's, so the fact that I played for my boyhood team, you know, still got that affiliation with Birmingham City, yeah. That this will sound fucking so crazy that I was on YouTube the other day and I'm watching it and it flicked and somebody was having a tattoo and I've got no tattoos. Never really wanted a tattoo. And I just sat there and I was just thinking, oh, I'm too old for a tattoo. But if I was going to have a tattoo, it'd be the blues back. There's something to do about me's penalty save. Do you know what I mean? But I would have, and I thought, I'll go and get a pen and start sketching something out. And I thought, this is stupid. Not at your age. And I'm thinking, I go away in MacArthur every year. I can't wait to pull my top off, sunbathe it, and I've got this tattoo. And he was like, what the fuck? What the fucking hell is that? Do you know what I mean? So that crossed my mind, and I'm thinking, no,
you
not.
You got it. I said you put it on the fin.
Thinking, you know, and just stuff like Oppie playing against the Villa and pulling his thing. I was on the bench at United, you know, when we'd never lost at Villa Park. And I used to get so much abuse because I'd been a blues from the people around. Lifting me top up with a blues badge. They went.
So just to go back to that team, obviously just before you left was relegation, wasn't it? Was that wrong? Was that 83?
Yeah.
So that team was, the players that were in the team at that time, how did relegation come about?
We didn't score enough goals.
Conceded more.
No, but I know you said previously you didn't concede that many, did you?
I didn't concede that much. We had a really good record. And we lost Mick for a period of time with a bad facial injury. And I think we lost our way then when he was out of the team. We hadn't got a real focal point. I think that affected us more than what we thought. And we never replaced him, you know, purely because of the financial state of the club, you know. And then we had a fire sale, you know. So your original question is, how did it happen? Because we had good players and they all had great careers that left. You know, Pat Vandenau, Mark Dennis, myself went, Mick Harford went, Noel Blake went, Kevin Dillon went. We all went in a short period of time. You think, oh, great team. People hated playing against us. We were physical, yeah, but we had some good players.
Yeah.
It is the fact that, I still put it down to the fact that we missed Mick so much. We did. We never really had a... Tony Rees ended up front. I remember Mark McCarrick. He was a Scouse lad. He ended up playing centre forward for a few games. We hadn't, the squad was quite thin,
yeah,
and we couldn't afford to replace Mick. So I think missing Mick was a big impact.
You talk about the players as well. It was an immense entertainment. Like, so obviously when we come and see you through the Riders stuff, sort of, yeah, it was the crazy gang of the division, wasn't it? With you, like,
you were maniacs, and
we learned the nicest possible way. So
we were all single. So we socialised together at the right time. Never went out after a Wednesday, with a game on the Saturday, and vice versa if we played on the Tuesday. You know, Saturday night was your last night out. So we socialised a lot together. We got a lot of stick, and me personally, we spoke about it off camera before, about living in Tamworth, being the big fish, and getting away from that environment, which we'll come to in a minute. When you're walking into a bar in Tamworth and you're walking past a group of lads and you're with your girlfriend and somebody throws a pint in your face before you've even spoke a word, because they were all Villa fans and I'm playing for the Blues, was I gonna just turn around and walk out and wipe my face? Was I just gonna go and get served? No, I chinned them, and it happened in people started. I think wanting the notoriety of beating me up or challenging me or whatever, and so. I had all that pressure, so I stopped going out in Tamworth, started going into Birmingham, and it was with the lads then. And it was always Villa fans. Always. No Albion, no Wolves, no, it was always Villa fans. And it just escalated from there, but it wasn't as bad as what everybody said. Yeah. There was a lot of things diffused and a lot of things, and I can honestly say, and on Elmon Cameron, not one of us caused one thing. Never ever them incidents, like throwing a beer and playing, being verbally abused, and when you with your girlfriend, you know, it's like putting them in a situation. And I often said, go on, you shouldn't, and you're not going with, you know, I'm not going without you, I know what's going to happen.
It's mad, isn't it? Because you were saying, weren't you, that even with Villa, with Gary Shaw and the likes of the players at the time, you were friendly, weren't you? Or you were social, yeah, away from football, but it was always the fans then that...
Yeah, so we stuck up for Gary Shaw, you know, in the Bell Area a few times, just because of circumstances, actually, say that with the opposite sex, he got himself into a bit of trouble. But... yeah, we played against them and we kicked two, you know, lumps out of each other. But off the field, then you'd socialise with them. So the Villa fans didn't know that we would socialise with Villa players, you know, because, you know, the pressures of playing football, this, that, the other.
One's that overland, yeah.
Yeah, I see it. And so it wasn't often, I can tell you that, it wasn't often, but certain. Villa lads, you know, I mean, there's certain ones that you would steer clear of them,
yeah,
like anything. But they probably had the same from Blues fans,
yeah,
you know, whenever they socialised. So, Yeah, then so that, yeah, it was
on the pitch, though.
But I couldn't walk away. That was my problem.
On the pitch, then it was a team that you didn't mess around with, wasn't it? On the pitch,
I remember well, let's take Mick for instance. Mick's hard but fair. Do you know what I mean? If he can take it, he give it. Obviously, he probably gives it more than than people wanted to give it him. And I remember Alex Ferguson saying to me once, he said he always remembered a massive argument was between Gary Pallister and Steve Bruce over who was picking Mick up. Nobody wanted to mark it. Nobody wanted to mark it. And he intercepted Sir Alex and asked them what they were arguing about, told blah, blah, blah. And he looked at both of them and said, well, I can't do anything about your looks, Bruce. He said, you pick it. Can't make you any uglier than what you already are. I said, you can mark it.
I'd heard on one of your other interviews as well. He said when you'd moved on to Watford and Mick had gone to Luton.
So it was ironic, hadn't it? The fire sale had started at Blues. Financially, the club were in dire straits. Keith Coombs was the chairman, that's on. And I think Alan Instone was the secretary, and they said, look, we're going to fold it. It's that bad. And we all went. Blake, you went to Portsmouth. Kevin Dillon went up to Portsmouth. Where's in Marco? QPR, did it. Don't know which way Mark went. QPR, South Africa. No, Mark Dennis went. I went to Watford. Mick went to Luton. And it was ironic that we lived closer playing for two different clubs than we did when we played for the same club. So socially, we got back to
more.
I saw more of him. And it was, as I say, he's my best mate. So it's been regular contact. He'll ring me today at some point. Every day we speak. I hope he's all right, actually, because I haven't heard anything. But he was out in London the other day. This sounds funny, and I've started laughing down the phone when he told me. So he's up in London. And he was throwing it down the rain. He was with a friend who had a hood, and Mick had got a brolly up, and he got his one hand in his pocket holding a brolly, and there's a bit of the curb missing, and he fell in the middle of the road. He thinks he broke his shoulder. He said he was in agony. He said, I definitely broke a rib. He said,
I started laughing. You're there. That's because it's annual.
I said, I'd love to have seen that. He started laughing. He went, don't make me laugh. I said, well, you definitely broke a rib then if you can't. If it's hurting when you laugh it. So he'll ring me because I said to him, as soon as you've got the x-ray results back, I said, but don't ring me yesterday because I was on the lash at the funeral. So he'll ring me. He'll ring me today. So, yeah, so the fire sale had happened, this and the other, and me and Mick got back together. And we socialised together back down that way, yeah.
Is that right that when you were playing, when the day before you spoke to him, when you were in goalies up front?
I've told you that. Was you that? Did you go when I told that?
No, I was there, yeah.
But it's a guy.
No, it doesn't. When I was watching some of your other interviews, it came.
You obviously want me to say it again.
Yeah, go on. I like it.
You see, Friday night, and the phone rings, no mobiles, and house phone. All right. I said, all right, Mick. He said, you know I'm going to do you tomorrow, don't you? I said, well, I wouldn't expect anything else. All right, see you tomorrow. Put the phone down. 78 minutes, he's gone. Nil-nil. He ain't come near me. I'm really happy. I'll just have a drink of water. It is mine, this one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, hello. And ball comes in, I get wiped out. I know he's done it straight away. My head hits the floor, and it's a plastic pitch at Luke. My head comes up, and I can see blood jetting out. I thought, oh, I've done my proper here. Oh, my teeth are okay. I'm lay there like that. He comes and stands above me. He says, I told you. Like that. He said, physio's on his way. And he walks away. So, physio went, he said, you're going to have to come off. I said, I've got 10 minutes left. And he just plastered my mouth with a load of Vaseline. I was chewing it. And I went in and I had 5 stitches in me. In the lip. And so I thought, my lip was out here, like that, 5 stitches. He's waiting for me in the players' lounge. So I thought, do I go in or? So I've got to front it up. So I think he told everybody and everybody had seen it. So as soon as the door opened, everybody's looking at me and I couldn't look out here like this. He went, T, yeah, I got your point. I said, you better put a straw in it then. Get on that, like this. So I'll go over to him and he went, oh, fucking hell, he said. I went, 5 stitches. 5? I only meant to give you 4. Like that, and that's it. And I'm still best mates when I go on holiday with him every year and think. So, you know, they were the thing. You accepted it in them days. I knew it was going to happen like that. You know, so, yeah, so he had a fearful reputation. So it weren't just his best mates that he used to chip.
I know the story about going with Frank up Broad Street. And do you mind telling us that one? Going and seeing a
band. So you've heard about me cleaning my dad's car a few times. So I was, you know, I weren't earning enough money at the time. Just got in the first team sort of thing before my proper contract, really. So my dad's car was our pride and joy, really, Hillman Avenger. So we played away a night game at Arsenal, came back. And he said to me, he said, Tony, he said, can you get you go through Birmingham, don't you? Can you give me a lift into the city centre? I said, well, honestly, Frank, I don't, barely. I said, I live in Tamworth. I go out the other way. And he went, oh, you don't mind, do you? Go on. So I said, yeah, okay. So Frank wears and chin, but Frank in my dad's car. And he went, what sort of car is it? Yeah, but I'm an Avenger. And I'd only got one tape, which was the Drifters. So I got the Drifters. Yeah, I told him music because he's a big Elvis fan. Wasn't he? He said, you need some proper music. He said, I'll bring you some Elvis tapes in. He said, for giving me a lift. Anyway, so I check him into the centre of Birmingham. He said, come in. I said, Frank, I can't have a drink, I'm driving. And he went, no, he said, have a Coke. He said, there's a band on in here. He said, they're going to be massive. He said, I want you to listen to them. I said, I'm not really. I wanted to get off, to be honest. He said, no, come on. So anyway, he convinced me to go with, park the car, in we go. And there's a few things that I remembered about it. We went in and straight away somebody handed it. He must have got a message or they knew what time he was coming in. Because as he walked through the door, somebody gave him a glass of champagne. You know, the King's arrived in, Elvis himself's arriving or whatever, but somebody handed him a glass of champagne. And I'm thinking, is this what footballers get? Like this treat? And we go in and all this. And there's nothing, there's a lot of people in there, but there's nothing going on. And then next minute, somebody makes an announcement. And we were in the Rum Runner and Duran Duran, before they were famous. Started in there.
Yeah, what you're saying, wasn't one of them a glass collector, one of them in the cloakroom?
So I later found out, I said, he said, they practice here all the time through the day. He says, and then at the night time, they're going to be big. He says, oh, they're going to be big. They sounded crap to me at the time, no disrespect, but at the time, you know, I've got no clue what the music was going to become of them. Obviously, we know the rest. But to earn the right to be in there and practice, one was a glass collector, one was a bottle washer, one was a cloakroom attendant. They all had jobs inside the Rum Runner. Shelf stacker, this and that's how they earn their keep. So obviously Frank knew his music and he knew they were going to become famous.
So obviously, goalkeepers are known notoriously for being a bit
bowling. Yeah.
What?
I always have an answer to that one.
Come on.
Well, any given time you've got 22 people on the pitch at the start of the game, haven't you? And you've got a goalie at each end. So you've got 20 chasing the ball around for 90 minutes and two just waiting for it to come to them. So who's bowling?
That's goalkeeper's logic.
That's my answer.
What's so I'm just going back to today's game, really. What's your thoughts? I think that the mentality of goalkeepers, there's not really many around at the moment. We discussed that.
We had this discussion the other day. As I say, I did some coaching for some kids and with the Q&A and things at the answer. And one of the parents said, who was the best out of Schmeichel, Van der Sar or David De Gea? And my question was, what are? And they go, goalkeeping. I mean, yeah, but there's a lot of components going into goalkeeping. Are they a good cross taker? Are they a good shot stopper? Are they good with the distribution? I said, which component are you on about? Or do you want to mash it all together? Is that what you mean? And they went, yeah. I said, so in answer to your question of my first look would always be to the defender goal, well, to the keep the ball out of the goal. Because this theory of a ball playing goalkeeper, you know, I once said to Eric Ten Hag, and I went, he says, I want a goalkeeper that can pass and play and put this and through the ranges and through the lines and this, that and the other. I said, you better get Glenn Hoddle then and put some gloves on him. I said, if that's what you want, or do you want somebody to keep out of the net? I said, because if we don't concede, Eric, if we don't concede, we've got a great chance of winning the match. He went, he said, I want a good goalkeeper. I said, no, you don't. You want a reliable goalkeeper. And that's the key word, reliable. But as soon as you put his name on a team sheet, you know you can relax. I said, you're not a goalkeeper that you're thinking, oh, he can hit this pass and he can hit this pass. But first shot at goal, you're 1-0 down. I said, so my philosophy is, it has always been, can he defend the goals? And I think we're going a little bit full circle in terms of the ball playing goalkeeper. I think goalkeepers and teams are getting caught out, and you know, because everybody, even at the lower end of the leagues, you know, your division two clubs, they have analysts. They watch the opposition. They'll break it all down. Where do we spring our traps from? Where do we start? Palio play it there, that'll come, and then we go. And they'll wait for the mistakes, and they'll lower down, and you get more mistakes. But it's happening higher up. So teams are analysing that goalkeeper, and they go, right, when he gets it on his right foot, that's his weak. That's when we're springing that. That's where we close them down, and we win the ball back. And they win the ball back a lot higher, in and around the opposition's box. So goals are getting conceded from that. Keepers are making the wrong pass. And because I do know that I can't actually, but I have got it written down, because when we did the analysis of this, of actually a goalkeeper receiving that ball, he's got like milliseconds of making his decision. Where's he going? And he can only relate to what he sees in front of him. So
it's that first touch as well, isn't it? It's how he takes that ball, isn't it? Depending on if he doesn't open his body up, which was like the Peacock Farrell goal, wasn't it, against Peterborough?
Gives him his choice with that first touch. If it's a good first touch, then he's got a better chance of going where he wants to do. If it isn't, then his decision is either fucking clearing it a lot, you know, and getting out of danger. But I think teams now are playing and taking that risk element out of it a little bit more and going longer sooner.
You know, after the players and the attributes to do that, haven't they? It got to change once the back pass rule started really getting, didn't it? That you have to be now a ball playing.
So things I've always said, Tony, is, you know, when as a keeper, you get the ball and then you pass it out, and then a centre half or a fullback takes it out, and then they allow them on, and then they panic, turn back and give it to the keeper for them to then go long.
Yeah.
And you go, why didn't the defender, who He's more proficient with his feet.
Why didn't he do it?
Yeah?
Yeah. Listen.
As a keeper, what's that lot for you then when you get that and you can see it coming, not while he's getting caught, and then they turn around in a panic and give it back to you?
So my sort of last moments of my career, let's say, last period of my career, obviously the back pass rule was in. The playing out like we did wasn't. So every time I got a ball back, all I saw was the numbers on the defender's shirts. Nobody was interested in getting it back. It wasn't a thing. So it went long anyway, you know, to me, unless it was an obvious one.
Yeah.
And we were winning the game and was trying to kill the time, run the clock down or whatever. I said to you off camera before that for me at Man City, we had Niall Quinn. It was vastly, vastly underrated, by the way. So I used to do a dribble and drive. Everybody used to back off thinking I was going to kick it long, and then I'd dribble it out of my box and I'd play a left foot pass into Quinny, who was the best target man, really was. And he'd bring it down and play David White in and running off the back of him and things like that. So it was very effective for us at the time. So you've got to play to your strengths, and I see sometimes now goalkeepers, the ball will come back to them and they've got the time and they hit it and it looks like a bad pass, a bad long pass, but it's not. It's because he doesn't want to go and challenge for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've seen it a million times.
Oh, yeah. So that there's no anticipation from the player.
So it looks like it's a bad pass from the keeper. And it's not, because the ball's actually five. It's in the air a long way. He's only got to make up 5 yards. And he's coming off a running jump, but he just... So you've got to have the wrong...
Yeah, so the Nike doll won't say that, and I'll just go, what's he doing there?
It's actually with John McCarthy the other week, wasn't it? The Benno used to have that ball there. McCarthy used to have 5 yards
City
defender, and that used to be the tactic then, but...
So when David White at Man City said if Quinny weren't playing, because David White was very quick, and he was 6'1", maybe, Whitey. And I'd say to him, and he'd say, listen, Whitey, no. I went, get your heels on the touchline. I'll leave it 5 yards just inside. And then you've got the momentum and you'll get even higher. So you're not off a standing jump. And it worked a treat for us whenever Noel went in the team. So sometimes I'll look at a pass and our analysts will go, pass completion on a goalkeeper. It's this. I said, no, it's not. I went, you're being very harsh there. I said, I know it actually says won by their defender, but the fact that we've not even gone for a challenge,
yeah,
when it's there to be challenged, I went, it looks bad on your stats, and that's where stats can be.
Is that frustrating for you?
That's where your human eye comes into it, you know, and you're seeing a live game or whatever, or you see on a video, but then when you actually look at the stats and you go, pass complete, they're putting down for too many there. You know, it's minus. You put him down in
that ball there.
And intercepted.
But the computer just goes,
it's down to his own teammate not challenging for it.
So we were saying earlier, weren't we, as well? Obviously, I was watching some of your videos the other day, and you were quite prominent in the Man City, Man United derbies, weren't you, when you were in goal for Man City. You had some pretty standout performances, didn't you?
You never won many. If there any, I think when I play for Man City against United.
But that was that Man United team, Cantona, that era versus the Man City team.
I mean, we give them a good run for the money. I mean, the one that still wrangles with me is when we were 2-0 up and we lost 3-2. And then we've had 0-0s, 1-1s, some tight affairs, games that we should have won and we didn't against them. I mean... I still say, for me personally, my best period of my career was the year before I left Birmingham. I don't know whether it was Ron or it's just down to me, everything clicking at that time. Because I know Graham Taylor had looked at lots and lots of goalkeepers and chose me. And I think that period, and then my actual 6 years at Watford was the best period. I played my best football at when I was playing for Watford.
Season 3 years, didn't
he?
Yeah.
So what was that move like? I know it's a bit of far side blues. Was there a few teams in for you? Did you want to play underground Tyler?
No, when I left Watford to Man City, there was a few teams in, but the actual move to Watford came about. I'd actually stayed at Mick's in Solihull, and I've gone in on the Monday morning with Mick, and I kept thinking, right, who am I going to ask to drop me off at the train station to get back to Tamworth? Because my car was in Tamworth. Ron Saunders used to call me Cody for some reason. You know, I was known as TC and everything, but he used to call me Cody. He went, Cody! Shouted down the corridor. I thought, fucking hell, what we've been up to last night? That was rehearsal. What did we do last night? And I went down to his office. He said, sit down. I sat down and he went, how do you think things are going for you? I went, see, I think I'm playing well, all this, that, and the other, you know, oh, dying on. I thought he was going to offer me a new contract. I really did. And he said, listen, he said, I don't want to lose you. He said, but we've accepted the bid, or the club have accepted the bid from Watford, and you're free to go and speak to him. And I went, I don't want to go. And he went, he said, you're free to go. He said, we have to sell you. He said, and you'll be the first of a few. He said, we have to raise money. So I said, right, okay. And then I just went, well, I haven't got my car here. And he went, what? I went, I stayed at Mick's last night and the car's in. So I'll have to get home to Tamworth first. And he went, stay there. Went out of the office. I'm sat there and I think, Watford. Right. I was going through their squad then in my head. I think,
did that stand out at that time? Was it?
Well, they just beat us in the quarter final.
Yeah.
So I knew that, you know, they had an exciting team, this, that, and the other. And my thoughts just turned then to Steve Sherwood, that was their goalie. I'm thinking, I know I'm better than him, so I should settle it quite quickly. This, that, and the other. They're not going to spend 300,000, which was quite a bit at that time, to put me in the reserves. This, that, and the other. So then he came back in, Ron, with Norman Bowdell, who was the chief scout. He said, Norman will drive you down.
Oh, was that quick?
That's it. I would literally, like, because normally I would have gone in a suit or, it doesn't happen these days. Do you know what I mean? Players turn up in ripped jeans and a T-shirt and stuff like that. But we were old school and I would have gone in a suit. But I was in my gear from being out with Mick the night before. And I hadn't planned to stay at Mick's. It just worked out like that. So I was still in the gear from the night before. So I felt like a bag of shit, to be honest. And Norman Bowdell gets me in the car and he's preaching to me about, he's obviously been told that he's got to convince me to sign for him. Graham Taylor's this, you've got this player, you've got that player, you've got this. And we got near to Toddington Shoes. He said, oh, Norman, you're going to have to pull over. I need to speak to my dad. And he went, what? He said, how old are you? I went, I don't care. I don't want him hearing it on the radio before I spoke to him. And he went, oh, right, fair point. So I'll get in, I'll get on a payphone at Toddington Service. And this is a conversation that you brought up before. And I said to him, Dad, I said, I'm on my way to Watford. They've come in for me and the Blues have accepted the bid. He went, what do you think? I went, oh, I don't know. I'm a Blues fan and I don't want to leave Blues. I'm playing well and this, that, and the other. He says, do not come back unless you sign for Watford. I went, what? He went, get away from your mates. And he meant it in the right way. He said, just get away from your mates because of the off-field shenanigans and this, that, and the other. So that was in my mind as well. And we carried on. And I've said it, and many players have said this before. Once you get in front of Graham Taylor, that's it. You're sold. You're sold. He's the best talker ever. You know, he knew more about me than I knew myself. He'd gone into so much background because he later said that he'd have to convince Elton John to pay 300 grand, which was a lot for them, for me. So he wanted to know all about my personality and all this. And he called me, he said, you're more a vigilante than a, what's it? He said, I know all about you. He said, I know all you're sticking up for your mates. And he named me mates. And I thought, has he found out all this information? He knew every one of my mates' names. And he said, how about when you went to court with him and what happened in Skegness and all this?
What happened in Skegness?
Well,
Butlins.
I got a suspended prison sentence, didn't I? Yeah, after that one. I come back. It was all right. I was single at the time, but I'd met a girl. Went back to the caravan. Don't come knocking if it's rocking. I came back and they were all in a big fight in the car park of where I'd left them. So then you see your mates having a dust up. So then I ended up getting involved at the wrong time, just as the police turn up. So we all get arrested and unfortunately, the lad that I'd ended up fighting with, or the two lads that I had come off thing, and he went to court and I got a suspended prison sentence. So
it is all
that. So this was the big rescue in my eyes. It was a big, no disrespect to my mates. I'd grown up with them since we were toddlers. You know, there's some cousins in there as well, and this, that, and the other. So that's what my dad meant. Don't come back unless you sign. He, you know, and he said, Graham Taylor's a disciplinarian. This is what you need. Ron Saunders was. Do you know what I mean? And I have to say, I went to Watford, and 6 years, it was no coincidence. I played my best football, like you said, three player of the years, and picked into the team of the year, PFA team of the year, and all this. And I can't think, and I'm not now, one incident that happened. And we socialised.
But it was never just never any lateness in central
London. It was just a completely different. I didn't go into London.
No.
I never, ever went into London. And it was just a completely different environment. When they say it's a friendly club, it was a friendly club. And you knew everybody at the club. You knew what they did, this, that, and the other. You know? I mean, to the fact that my mate mentioned it yesterday at the funeral, he said, do you remember when you played Nottingham Forest at Vicarage Road and I was down for the weekend? He said, you've played the game, you've come in the players' lounge, your dad and Derek have drove back to Tamworth. He said, and we went into the social club, the supporters club, and played pool. So I was mixing with the supporters and playing pool with them. You know what I mean? And he went, Where would you do that these days? Fans would never get to it. That's completely different. I mean, I know it is. It's massive now. You know, but there's no mobile phones. There's no social media. There's no even more relaxed and just this, that, and the other. So that was the best thing that ever happened to me, taking me down to Watford, as I say.
Did you ever get a shout out of the concert from Elton John, though? Because obviously Dev's... Dev's got the shout out during one of the concerts. Do you ever...
Did he?
Yeah.
Was he at the concert?
Yeah, he was at the concert.
Al John saw him, Dev.
And at the benefits
there concert. There is a... I think he did a podcast with Troy Deeney. He did one with... I don't know, he did one with Peter Crouch.
Who, Elton John?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Elton John and Troy Deeney on a podcast?
Yeah, they did one. He interviewed him.
Why?
Whether it was a podcast, I think it was a podcast. He named his four best signings and I was one of them. So, Dev might get a shout out there, but I got as one of his best signings. And I might have it on my phone somewhere. I mean, he put me on his private plane. We played up at Blackpool and I was in court the next day. Put me on his private plane to fly me back.
There's that tie as well. You've got an ear that I looked into the better. The wine bar and his son.
Yeah, you were injured.
Gary Plumley. Prior to the semi-final of Bradford Thumb, it was the week before, so I was out for the rest of the season. So this was April, and at the beginning of April, the semi-final, and broke his thumb, and then we had Steve Sherwood and David Jones was a youth team keeper. And Steve Sherwood then dislocated his finger on the Friday before the semi-final. And these fingers, or two fingers, I think it was.
And what was that, training?
Training. Because he said, just strap them together. And I think I don't have to be corrected on this. I'm almost certain this is fact, that because the semi-final, the final against Everton in 84, when Steve, Andy Gray sort of headed it out of his hands, he got the blame for that, Steve Sherwood. And the reasoning behind he didn't let him play with them strapped up was the fact that he thought if he made a mistake, the crowd would really crucify him because of the final. He decided not to play them. I still think he should have played a young David James. Yeah, I know he's only a kid, but physically he was this and that. And he was far better than Gary Plumley, who ended up playing in goals. He'd been playing part-time football. And you just can't write it, can you? I go down with a broken thumb, he dislocates too. We've got David James, who later become an England goalkeeper.
Whereas Gary Plumley was...
Whereas Gary Plumley had a wine bar in South Wales. And we lose 4-1. And he should have said... And he should have saved five of them. Hey.
He won in one of Alan John's top five songs.
So it was just ironic that we fought a war. And it just... A wine waiter in goals. You just couldn't write it. You just couldn't write it. And I remember walking back up the touchline at Villa Park, the semi-final, and I've got my arm in plaster. And, you know, it was plastered and up to here, this, that, and the other. In fact, I still think I was in a sling. And I'm walking up the touchline and some Watford fans, it's all your fucking fault, coat. I went, what? It's your fucking fault that we're losing this fucking semi-final. Well, I just went, you want me to play with this on? Like that, you know what I mean? And they just...
No one blaming Gary Plumley, but...
No, yeah, I'm thinking, you know, there's only one person to blame, that was Graham. God rest his soul. You know, because he should have played David Jones. I'm convinced he should have played David Jones.
Even when he was young, could you say he was going to be a player?
Yeah, physically he was like, you know. So we'd go out training when the weather was bad and this like this, and we'd have our bottoms on, tops, everything. David Jones would come out in a little T-shirt, shorts. He's mental, you know. Obviously he went on to have a great career. And so I don't think a semi-final would have affected David Jones. I really don't. You know,
Well, the thing is, you've got that youthful invincibility, haven't you? When you're young as well, you don't think about it.
You don't. And I think Graham never ever said it, but I think deep down he knew he dropped a boo-boo by doing that. Now I don't know what this influence of our chief executive was, because that was Eddie Plumley, Gary's dad. So I don't know what the influence of that was. Gary can do a job. Gary will do a job, or whatever. And it ain't as if he's just come out of the wine bar. He had played for Newport.
he wasn't still wearing.
No, and got his pinny on and just been...
That's to put his mixers down just by the post.
Just been bottle washing or whatever, you know. He had a career in Newport and places like lower down.
But in a semi-final, a cup
semi-final. In the semi-final against Tottenham, with a part of, hold on a minute. You know what I mean? So, that was a big disappointment. Mm. Yeah.
So looking back across your whole career.
Yeah.
What are you most proud of? What's the moment where you are?
In my early days, I'll say that not a proud moment, but the way I conducted myself was in my early days of my career. Well, probably when I first met Mick, Mick said something to me, and I took it through my career. Mick said something very, very, very poignant to me. And I said, oh, the manager, somebody else is here, somebody else. He said, are you bothered about impressing them? He said, I'm not bothered about impressing the fans. All I want to impress is my teammates on a daily basis in training. That's all I want to do. He said, and if I've got them on my side, I've got a better chance. And I took that on board, and I've relayed that so many times to young goalkeepers. Don't worry about who's watching there and who's watching there. Who you're working with on a daily basis is a big factor. Impress your teammates. And that's I want my teammates to talk about me, that we've got top goalie, top trainer, top lad, this, that, the other. I says, that's the thing that I remember from Mick, probably the most sensible thing he's ever said to me. get your boots on, it's going off in a minute. it's one of the most things that's stuck with me, you know, and that's all I wanted to do, is impress my teammates. I wasn't bothered about the manager. You know, the fans' adulation and things like that, that just comes along. If I'm doing it right with my teammates, it'll be right with them. The proudest moment of my career, I can't go past my debut, can't get past that. People have asked me, and I've played far better. I didn't play that great in the game, I don't think. I can't remember much of it other than those things that I said about the pitch looking small. I had a stake. The fact that I made the save and, you know, yeah, great start and stuff like that. I've played far better and had far better performances. But the fact that it's my first game, my first touch.
What is it that's the specific detail on the Guinness Book of Records entry?
The fact that it's the first touch and saving a penalty in the shortest time.
So before we do wrap then, have you got a message for Blues fans?
What, other than keep right up?
Other than keep right up.
I think it's exciting times, you know, with the Wagner and the Brady and all this. I'd like to meet Tom Brady, actually. I mean, what a career he had, by the way. So it's exciting times. I don't think I'll get invited if I say, well, I don't mind, but I'm not a fan of the picture of the stadium. I'm not a fan.
It's a divided opinion, hasn't it?
Yeah. Not a chimney man.
Yeah, no. Unless it's going to be called the Fred Dibner Stadium. I don't like the picture of it, you know, I've got to be honest. But it's what's needed. It's showing the progression of the club. It's going to bring in so many jobs for Birmingham people. So I think they're right. That's off the pitch. On the pitch, I think we'll get better and better. You know, there's been some games this season where they've played really, really good football under Chris Davis. And then games that you've typical Blues, but the games that you're expecting to win, they don't perform. But that's football, isn't it? That's why we love it.
It's the hardest league in the world, isn't it? The Championship.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting out of it, I think if we did get out of it, I think we'd be in the Premiership for a long time because of the backing.
They mean business, don't
they? Yeah, they do mean business. And what they've done so far, you know. Probably, I don't know, you can't compare it to the Wrexham thing. That is, what they've done is remarkable. Remarkable. But I think there are exciting times ahead for Birmingham City. I really do.
Thank you ever so much for your time today, Tony.
It's not like
just got to ask, TC, did that run concurrently with the Top Cap cartoon that was quite popular at the time?
What? It started when I...
These were the pack.
Started at the Blues I don't know. I don't know who the first person was that called me TC, but it started at the Blues. As I say, there's only Oppie, and I want to message him because he's been rushed into hospital. So I hope he has a speedy recovery. But Oppie and Ron Saunders used to call me Cody. Everybody else called me TC. It wasn't until I really went to Man City, I went there as TC, everybody knew me as TC. Who was I replacing? Officer Dibble.
Andy Dibble.
We had Andy Dibble.
Yeah.
So we had TC Top Cat and Officer Dibble. It's just ironic.
Yeah. Think that was a factor in them signing you for a club record fee at the time? We could make that joke.
He's a star, but I could talk for hours on him. He is a star. When you're supposed to have a rivalry, he's a great mate. Honestly, he's daft as a brush. He had no malice. I've come to replace him. He had no malice. He couldn't have been nicer. He really is a good lad. Yeah. Yeah, TC and Officer Dibble.
Brilliant.